Married to legendary Rolling Stones guitarist Ronnie Wood for some 30 years, Jo Wood lived the rock and roll life. Over the years, she collected photographs, diary entries and other mementos, which she has now turned into a book. It's titled Stoned, and it gives us a once-in-a-lifetime look inside the biggest band in the world. And Jo Wood is with me now. Jo, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Lovely to be here.
Now, the first thing I noticed is there's an endorsement from your ex-husband in the book.
Yes.
Surprised me.
Oh, did it? Well, I went to him when I first was offered to do a book from the publicist. I went to him and I said, Ronnie, I'm going to do a book with all our old snaps, well, my old snaps of our life. And I said, what do you think? And he said, as long as you show me it before it goes into print.
And you did.
And so I did. And he took out one letter, which was from the accountant in 1978, and he said that was irrelevant to the book. And then he said, but I love everything. And so I said, thank you very much.
You describe it in your introduction as kind of a closing of a chapter in your life, but one that you look back on with great affection.
Yes, I really do. I've got such great memories of going on the road and travelling and all the people that I love and adore, we used to tour with, and I still actually am close to them now.
Now, you were married to someone else before you met Ronnie, and you talk about that in the book, and you had a son,
yes,
Jamie, who became part of your big family.
Yes, I was married young, actually. I got married in Las Vegas when I was just 18.
And your mother said, don't do it.
My mum begged me not to do it.
And she said, I told you so, but nice.
And she did say, I told you so. But and nicely. I said, you were right, Mum.
So talk to us about then. Here you are, a very young mother.
Yes.
And you're now single again because you split up very, very quickly. How did you actually meet Ronnie Wood?
Well, my real love was modelling. I loved to be in front of the camera. So I joined an agency and started working again. And my mum looked after Jamie, and I was invited to a party of a friend of mine, and I thought, oh, should I go? Oh, they said, come on, Joe, you've got to come. And I thought I was going to know everybody there, and I walked in, and I hardly knew anybody there. And that's when Ronnie came up to me and said, do you know who I am?
And did you?
Well, I knew he was a musician, but I didn't know his name or anything like that.
You had been to a Stones concert with your first husband.
Yes.
And you left early.
Left early because it was too loud. And I didn't notice Ronnie then. I didn't notice him there.
So this guinea fella comes up and you know he's a musician. He looks like a musician and he's chatting you up big time.
Yeah.
And what did you tell him? You told him a fib.
I told him a fib because I thought he was so full of himself, showing me a picture of himself and saying, do you know who I am? So I said I worked in, when he asked me what I did, I said I worked in Woolworths on the broken biscuit counter, main branch in Oxford Street. And he said, are you manageress? I said, no, I work selling broken biscuits.
Now, you and your pal, when you went around town and there were people trying to chat you up, because you're too, obviously, young.
Me and Sue.
Yeah. You had names for yourselves which you gave to people that you wanted to get rid of. What did you call yourself?
We used to say we were sisters. And I was Philia and she was Lickia. Philia and Lickia Bulls.
And it takes a moment, but we'll get there. Now, what then happened? You're trying to get rid of this upstart, this full of himself musician. How did it blossom into something far more serious?
So I was actually moving into my friend Lorraine and David's house where the party was. And because I was leaving my flat the next day. So I went off and did my thing at the end of that party where he followed me around everywhere. And the next day after work, I came with my bags back to the house. And David said, there's somebody waiting in the other room for you. I said, who? He said, go in and have a look. And there was Ronnie and his chauffeur. He said, we've just spent the whole afternoon outside Woolworths, outside the staff entrance, and you don't work there. I know.
And that was the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Yeah.
Now, you took pictures all the time, and we have to go back to a time when you either had a film camera where you had a roll of film which had to go to the processor or a Polaroid.
Yeah.
And that was it. That were, they were the choices.
Yeah, I loved my Polaroid. First of all, I use my Polaroid all the time, so I've got tons of Polaroids. And then Ronnie bought me a proper camera, and then I was off just clicking away. In fact, the picture on the book is the is the camera that...
It's obviously taken in a mirror, and it's you in a red dress taking a picture, and shoulder to shoulder with you is Ronnie.
Yes.
But this is taken through the mirror.
So that was me actually trying out the camera.
Now, in terms of taking pictures, I mean, you were a fashion model, so therefore you had to pose. You had to be on the other side of the camera. Where did the love of being on the wrong side of the camera come from, do you think?
Well, I just wanted to capture moments, you know, that I saw, and funny things, and so I just started snapping away, and I just enjoyed it. I loved that whole thing of putting a roll of film in a camera. It was great.
But you talk in the book about, you know, you go on tour with the Stones, and you take these rolls of film, and then you come back, and you wouldn't risk dropping them into a processor on tour, because heaven knows where the pictures would end up.
Yeah, I had a local processor at home, and I would just take like 150 rolls of film in, say, all of these, please. and they got used to it.
You could imagine these days trying to find someone you could trust with your pictures.
Couldn't do it.
They'd be on the front of the Sun or the Star.
Yeah, you couldn't do it. But then it was like we were freer, had more of freedom.
Yeah. Those who liked their picture taken, I mean, you talk about Ronnie and Keith as a pair. I mean, when you got one, you got the other.
You really did, yeah. They are brothers, you know, really. They're like brothers.
It's a bromance, as you describe it.
Yeah, the original bromance. Yeah, so it was easy to take pictures of those two because we were there all the time, you know. There were when Patty came on the scene in 1982, I think. We were just the four of us, and so it was easy to take pictures there. But Mick was always a little bit more aloof, so I was always a bit unsure whether I could just put my camera in his face and take another picture.
But you did. But, there's lots of pictures of Mick.
Yeah,
throughout
I did. But Keith was really easy. He was just, you know.
Now, you scarcely knew Ronnie, and you were pregnant again.
I know. I was a very fertile young girl.
I mean, you picture of yourself in a bikini when you're 6 months pregnant with Leah.
Yeah.
And it's just a lovely picture that you have there. And what did he say when he found out that he was going to be a dad? He already had had a partner in life, of course.
Yeah, he had already got Jessie and he'd split up with Chrissy. And I got pregnant very quickly, actually, and I went to him and I said, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And he said, you are keeping that baby.
Yeah. No discussion.
Yeah.
That is it.
That was it. So I was a bit scared about that, but I don't think I would have gone and had an abortion. I'm sure I wouldn't have done. So I would have rather gone home to mum. And done
and
it that
risked
way.
Her wrath again.
I didn't tell her until I was about 6 months pregnant, and I rang her up and I said, "Mum, I've got something to tell you." She said, "Josephine, I had a dream last night that I was pregnant, and I kept saying it must be my daughter's." I said, "Well, yes, I'm pregnant, Mum."
The relationship between Leah and Keith is a very fond one.
Yeah. Yes, he calls her princess. Even to this day, it's his princess. Yeah. They have a really nice relationship.
There is no covering up the fact that drugs were very much part of the scene. I mean, in one early part of the book, you talk about one of the projects was to get Keith off heroin because he'd been a user for quite a while.
For 10 years, he was addicted to heroin. And I'd never seen anybody use that before. So it wasn't long that I knew him and that he had to clean up. So,
I mean, the first time you meet him, it's in this bizarre adventure in Paris, first of all.
Yeah.
You're going to Paris to meet this guy, Mr.
Ronnie
Wood.
Said, meet me in Paris at L'Hotel. okay.
So, so you arrive at L'Hotel.
I arrived at L'Hotel and I, in the afternoon, I think it was in the afternoon, and I said, Mr. Wood, and they went, there is no Mr. Wood here. And I said, there must be. No, there's not. And it's full, our hotel is full up. I said, I have to be here. I don't know where to go. Where
no
else
money,
to go?
In Paris, on my own.
Yeah, and it, finally they gave me the little maid's room at the top of the hotel, and I thought, what an idiot. I've listened to that man. He's got me to Paris. Oh, my God, what a fool. So I went to sleep trying to think out how I was going to escape, and 6 o'clock in the morning the phone rings, and it was Ronnie. And so he came up to the room, and he walks in the room, and behind him was another man. And I thought, what? And then it was Keith, and he walked straight past me, he sat down, he opened his bag, he took out a spoon and a tablet, crushed it, put water in it, got his syringe out of the bag. I thought, oh, Jesus Christ. And he drew it into that, and he went straight through his shirt, and then he turned around and he said, how very nice to meet you, my dear. I've heard a lot about you. And I couldn't believe it. Oh, God.
Dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Yeah. But that was the first introduction to that kind of life. Now, there was another brush later on in St. Martin in the Caribbean. You ended up in jail.
Yes, because we hung out with the wrong people, and we didn't know they were drug traffickers. Oh, God, how stupid of us. And we did six in St. Martin on the Dutch side. You were guilty until proven innocent. And so they shoved us into jail. What we didn't know is that the guys had hung kilos of cocaine in a tree outside the house. And security had seen this and reported it to the police. But because they weren't there and we were in the house, they came and arrested us. And we were going, why are we actually in jail? But I didn't see Ronnie for 6 days.
Yeah, in jail.
Yeah.
You were in jail.
Yeah.
The adventures on the road were many and various, but there are also little tips that come in the book. For example, how to make your hair stick up and stay in exactly the right formation. This is what Ronnie, he had a technique.
Lemon juice.
Lemon juice.
He used to put loads of lemon juice and it used to dry sort of rigid.
He'd use a blow dryer on the lemon juice in his hair,
yeah,
and it would stay...
Yeah.
Rock solid,
yeah,
if you'll pardon the phrase.
Rock solid.
So many pictures, and how do you make a selection from thousands and thousands of pictures, Polaroids and also newspaper clippings, because some of the triumphs of the Stones are recorded in the book?
Well, I just went through all the boxes that had been in storage for ages and then all the pictures, put them into piles, try and make some sort of chronological order of it all. And then I put them into files and took them to the publishers and they said, now let us do the edit. So I was, please make sure you use the picture of Leah and Keith, and please make sure, they said, don't worry, we'll... But they did... I didn't use lots of them that I wanted to use because they said 500 pictures.
There will be a volume two, I have no doubt. There are also things I learned about, you know, being on tour with the Rolling Stones. For example, socializing, and they were like magnets to big names, whether it was John Belushi or Sheryl Crow or Brad Pitt or any of those people. Socializing happened before the show.
Yes. Oh, yes. Everybody would arrive before the show and go in and see them, say good show and hang out and be in the voodoo lounge or whatever lounge they called it for each tour. And then... after the show, we'd go straight back to the hotel. And if they weren't tired, you'd have people up to the room.
Okay, but it'd be quieter, not
but
the,
it'd be
the
much
kind
quieter.
Of mayhem. Oftentimes, of course, it was back on the plane.
Yes,
birthdays. Onto the next venue. There's a guy called Stu. That you remember fondly.
Yes.
He was really a Rolling Stone, but in a way his face did not fit. Explain.
Lovely Stu. Stu was a great boogie keyboard player that was with them from the 60s. And he used to drive them around and just play boogie piano. And play, you know, he just fitted in well musically, but he didn't like that lifestyle. I mean, whilst they were out at dinner and going clubbing or partying or whatever, Stu would be on the golf course. And
Doesn't work. Rolling Stone playing golf. Yeah, well, not then, perhaps now.
He just didn't like any of that lifestyle, but he was just a lovely, lovely man.
Now, on tour, you have a choice, and you went to, it seems, nearly all the gigs if you were on tour.
Yeah.
But you had a choice when you have children. Do you stay at home or do you go on tour with the kids? And you brought
the kids.
What was that like?
Well, it started off with just summer holidays and Easter holidays, and then I missed them so much because they were doing long tours then. And I said, Ronnie, let's take the kids on tour with us. He said, fine. And then once I took my kids, then Patty took her kids, and then Jerry bought her kids. And they loved going on tour.
The life of a Rolling Stone is like so complicated, but there, sometimes discipline is called for. And on the Steel Wheels tour, you reproduce a book of rules. Yes, a book of rules for those travelling with the Rolling Stones.
Yes. Well, you see, between 1983 or 82, Keith and Mick had a big argument. They fell out and they weren't talking to each other. And when they got back talking again, which Ronnie helped to do that, they had a new promoter, Michael Cole, and they... The concerts earlier were all sort of over the place. They were real rock concerts, 2 hours late on stage and all that. So when they came back in 1989, they were going to do it better, and Mick wanted it more professional. So Michael Cole helped us do that. And everybody had a job. There were rules. They couldn't be late anymore on stage. Baggage had to be on time. It was all different. Makeup, hair, everything.
I mean, the rules, if you have incidentals in the hotel, pay for them yourself. And they must be paid for before checkout.
Yeah.
In other words, the company was not going to pay for these things. You had to redeem them. Were the rules by and large adhered to, or were they rules made to be broken?
No, everybody was very good. Because I think it was so mad early concerts. I think it was a good thing that it became a proper production.
And of course, the lads were getting on a bit. Now, we know that Mick had a brush with health last year or earlier this year, was it?
Yeah.
And got himself sorted out. And he is fit as a flea. I mean, he really is.
Yeah.
But there's one cartoon you have in the book showing, talking about the lads. And would they be able to manage their Zimmer frames around the stage?
That was ages ago, years ago, I know.
Years ago.
And now they're still touring. Can you believe it?
Now, your life has moved on. And, of course, Ronnie's life has moved on. Do you miss that life? Because it's now part of your past rather than your present.
No, I don't miss it. I like to go on an adventure every now and then. So I try and do things that take me out of my comfort zone. But I have so many great memories. I like my life as it is now. I don't want to be on tour now. Mm.
Well, I remember talking to both of you at some stage on the Late Late Show, and Ronnie was talking about his art, and you include some of his sketches in this book.
Yes.
Because that was a good time before things went a bit pear-shaped.
Yes. And there's lots of really nice pictures in there that he drew of me. I've got some really beautiful ones at home as well. So I asked him if it was all right to put some of his drawings in. He said, yeah, let them see the light of day.
Well, it is crammed full of great stuff. I mean, the subtitle of the book is Photographs and Treasures from Life with the Rolling Stones. The book is simply called Stoned. The publisher is Cassell. It's priced around €20. And its author, Joe Wood, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you very much, Pat. It was lovely to see you.